As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and each and every Friday, myself and co-host George Ellick will preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action alongside Bet365's Steve Freith. We're going to get straight into it this week, but before we do, just remember at the moment you can sign up to The Athletic for just £3.33 a month for an entire year. To take advantage of that, just go to theathletic.com/footballpod. Guys, hope you're both well. Friday evening, Brentford v Watford. An unusual television pick, I would say, George, but no Ivan Toney for Brentford, which will be a blow, and he's always quite fun to watch for Brentford as well.
Yeah, he is. This feels more like a Friday night EFL game live on Sky from last season than a Premier League one, which is good to see. But Ivan Toney is out. He was out as well in the game against Leeds, which they nearly won. They went down very late on to a Patrick Bamford goal, which was disappointing because they put in a half decent performance, and Leeds are starting to kind of trend in the right way, I guess. So for them to be without Toney but still score the two goals to put them in that position to win the game and come away with just the point would be disappointing. Toney is out here. He's had a positive COVID test. It feels like, given the stories around Tottenham and Leicester at the moment, like this is going to be a bit of a constant thread maybe for the next few weeks, with a lot of these players missing due to COVID. So we're going to have to keep our kind of fingers on the pulse when it comes to who's in and who's out. And I guess a lot of managers will probably keep their cards pretty close to their chest in terms of that. But we know that Tony's out. We know that Sergio Canos is out as well. But the one thing I would say about Brentford is that we may not, or many people might not have heard of some of the players who deputise, but these are guys who are, you know, that their strength in depth may not be as evident as some other teams who have quality household names throughout their squad, but the players who do step up when they have players out are very, very good. And the way that Brentford are run is they have a succession plan, which means that when Ivan Toney does leave Brentford in the next 18 months or so, probably, unless something goes wrong with Toney or very right with Brentford, you know, Marcus Force is earmarked to be the guy who's going to step up into that role. You know, he's someone who never lets Brentford down. His goal per minute ratio is fantastic for them. And I think it must be tricky for him as a striker who doesn't get that much consistent game time to perform at a high level, because you often think of strikers needing that consistency. So, you know, Johan Wiese is another one who they spent a lot of money on in the summer. He's played well in cup games. He got the winner at West Ham a couple of months ago. Another player we haven't seen a great deal of who might come in here as well. So, yes, key players out and they'll miss them, but it's not a threadbare squad, even if we don't know too much about the guys who are going to step up. History shows us they're normally pretty good as well.
Yeah, I can't decide whether Brentford are going to be in a relegation battle or not, Steve. This is the kind of fixture, though, they're not going to be in one that they need to pick up 3 points in.
Yeah, I mean, they're still 5-1 for relegation, Dan. You know, sitting in 13th place, 7 points above the you know, the drop zone. They had a great start, didn't they, you know, to the season. Admittedly, it was against a very weak Arsenal side. I think us three could have probably played and probably, you know, got 3 points there for the Bees. Currently in that sticky spell, 1-8. That was against a lacklustre Everton side as well. But even though it's not the two of the sexiest sides in the Premier League, this is a game that I'm really looking forward to. I think it could be a quite entertaining affair as well, but it's a good chance for Brentford to get three more points, and clearly Watford need three more points as well to try and get themselves up in the division.
What's changed with Brentford, George, from the start of the season? They got off to a flyer of a start, as good a start as any Championship team newly promoted has had. It's not quite clicked, has it? But what's changed, do you think? What's the reason for this?
I think part of it might be that teams, Premier League teams, now know what to expect. There may have been a bit of complacency when it came to Brentford early on in the season. As I said, I think in the pre-season pods that we did, you know, there's this idea of Brentford being an attacking, aesthetically pleasing football team, and they can be, but at the same time they have a pragmatic manager in Thomas Frank who sets them up to frustrate quite often, and they're very, very good at holding their shape against teams who like to have a lot of the ball. So I think it's a case of maybe being found out a bit. It's probably also a case of expectations being heightened to a level which is going to be unsustainable. I still think that they should be okay. The form has dipped alongside it, but they're in okay shape. If you'd offered them this at the start of the season, they probably would have taken it. But they're playing against an opposition here in Watford who started the season, not atrociously, but pretty poorly enough to sack the manager. And the performances we're seeing in the last few weeks, in my view, are well above the levels we're seeing under Cisco Munoz.
They're certainly more attacking. They're certainly scoring more goals defensively. I mean, yeah, it's another 3 goals to it against City, taking it to 19 goals in the last eight games that he's been in charge, Dan. So clearly no clean sheet. The hangover's still there defensively. I think they're around 130 to keep one in this game. But I tell you what Watford have got, and since he's been there, they got the fourth best XG in the Premier League, sitting behind Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea. So that ain't bad going forward. Mm. Everybody's talking about these fixtures coming up, which is a nice run, and the bad fixtures they've had. Sometimes it's a bit of a dangerous game to play that, but you look at it, up until the game against Manchester United away on the 26th of February, they look like they've got some absolute corkers. So, you know, the like of Brentford, Burnley, Palace before Christmas as well. They didn't play as aggressively against City as they did against Chelsea, but they will feel that they're capable of going there. They're a big old price to do that, around the 13-5 mark. But out of the two sides, it's Brentford who the bookmakers expect to stay in the division, because they're 4-11, the Bees, to be the top promoted side this season, with Watford at 5-2 and Norwich out with a washing at 12-1.
Yeah, I mean, Watford feels like Watford may as well attack, because I don't think they've got the quality in the defence to be able to defend, and at least make use of that quality in attack and have a go. And that feels a little bit like what Ranieri has done. George, what's your tip for this one?
Yeah, there's one kind of thread with Watford that we're seeing in the last few weeks is that they are attacking, and Ranieri is setting them up to press high. I know that they didn't necessarily do that, as Steve said, as effectively against Man City, but I think coming off of what was such an impressive performance against Chelsea the midweek before, where they pressed them so high up the pitch, I think just physically it was always going to be difficult. And I think Ranieri may have looked at City and thought, you know what, rather than running ourselves into the ground again here, let's sit off them a bit and maybe not play quite so much our normal game. But teams who press high, teams who are aggressive and look to attack at every opportunity, are normally the ones who pick up more corners, because as you'd expect, they're more direct with the way that they attack. And if you look at under Ranieri so far, in that Man City game, they had 5 corners to City's 11. In the Chelsea game, they had 6 corners to Chelsea's none. So Chelsea didn't have a single corner, Watford getting 6. It was 8-6 to Leicester in that game as well, in the game before. And then 9-3 to Watford in that 4-1, that famous 4-1 victory over Manchester United that saw Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's reign come to an end. So they've won the corner battle against Chelsea and against United, and picked up 6 corners against Leicester and 5 corners against Man City. I think we can expect them to be the team who are attacking more often in this one. Game state would also suggest that if Brentford do justify their short price and are the ones to take the lead, that would further put the ball in Watford's court in this respect. So I think the 11-8 on Watford to be the team with most corners is probably wrong. I mean, in my view, I'd probably say that Watford are more likely than Brentford to win that count. So the tip here, a nice nerdy corner one for you, Dan.
Love it.
Watford to have more corners at 11-8.
Thank you very much, George. Keep that nerdiness up. Game Always. Two is Manchester City v Wolves, the Saturday lunchtime game. And Steve, you'll enjoy this. Same old story for Wolves. A bit like they were at the start of the season. They're now 3 games without scoring. What's going on?
Yeah, they're doing okay, they aren't they? I think there's talks of a, you know, who's going to be scoring the goals for them, and you just look at the bench and you see Fabio Silva, that and just that signing just looks more interesting by the day. You know, 35 minutes for £35 million worth of footballer we've seen this season. I don't know whether he needs a spell out on loan, but we'll see what happens there. But I just feel that this game is probably made for a player who really enjoys playing against Manchester City. Hasn't been a regular this season, but Adama Traore seems to save his best for City. He scored two at the Etihad when Wolves were 20-1 to win there, when they won 2-0. He got their first goal when they beat them December 2019 as well. We always talk about the amount of shots that Traore has. He's had 21 this season, 5 on target, no goals from an XG of 1.8. He hit the bar against Burnley as well, and I think he gets, you know, the fouls, the tactical fouls that we see against him. I'm pretty sure Pep will probably do the same as well. That I think Jurgen Klopp, I think they had 6 last week against him as well, against Liverpool. So I think this is a perfect opportunity for Traore maybe to put a bit of pressure on that Manchester City back line, which has been, of course, very good as always. Wolves' goals conversion rate has been one of the worst in the division this season as well. Listen, they're doing fantastically defensively. Max Kilman, Connor Cody, etc. are doing really well. Saar, the goalkeeper, now has a better XG against than the Mendy. Everyone's talking about Mendy for Chelsea, how well he's done this season. Saar is the best shot stopper currently in the division as well. And even though Wolves are a huge price to get something here, I can see them at least being on the score sheet.
This came up in a podcast I did this morning, actually. How many career league goals do you think Adama Traore scored?
Off the top of my head, without looking now, oh, I don't know, 10.
Yeah, I was going to say about 8.
12 is the answer. 12 career. It's not much, is it, for someone with so much attacking talent? I'd imagine most of them would have come for Middlesbrough in the Championship. Should get on the score sheet more, should have more productivity. A sensational player to watch, but definitely needs more end product. Now, City were beaten by Leipzig in midweek, George, but they were already through and topped the group. Good news was that Cancelo, Silva and Rodri were rested. I presume they've probably played the most games along with Diaz so far this season. So good for them to have a midweek off. That should benefit them going into this game.
Yeah, that is a very, very positive spin there on a midweek defeat.
There we go.
That is the good news, is that, you know, they didn't play a first team. But I think when you have a perfectionist like Pep Guardiola, you know, you saw his interview after the game. He would not have been happy with the defeat. You know, Pep hasn't had the greatest record in Europe throughout his managerial career at Barcelona, at Bayern Munich, and now at Man City in the Champions League, and particularly in away games in the Champions League. So I don't think he would have taken this too lightly. I think he still felt like he put out a team good enough to beat a Leipzig side who've just sat their manager and were yet to appoint another one. So it was, you know, it's not significant. I'm not sitting here saying it's going to have any bearing at all on whether or not they beat Wolves. And if anything, it could refocus them somewhat. And it could mean that certain players who came in from the cold, like Fernandinho, might not be seeing many more Premier League minutes, despite seeing him a bit recently. But there'll be frustration. But as you say, the key men this season, I mean, there seems to be quite a lot of conversation around Bernardo Silva at the moment. He's definitely the flavour of the month, and it kind of feels like Kevin De Bruyne might have a difficult time getting back into the City team on merit at the moment because of the way that they're playing. So Bernardo isn't very important. We spoke about Rodri last week as well. I think this is going to be interesting. It's going to be a big test for Bruno Lage to show what he's about, because we've seen him very much stick to his guns in terms of the way that he likes to play. But you can't always do that to City, and often teams who look to try and keep the ball against City end up being picked off so easily with their high press and concede a fair few. So I'll be interested to see how he does set up and whether or not he looks to change it at all. But, you know, the goal scoring issues are clear to see. You know, relying on Hwang for the goals, that someone who'd never been prolific previously in his career, really was never going to work. And you look at his recent performances as well. I think he's only had 2 shots in his last 6 Premier League games, and they both came in the same game. So 5 of his last 6 games, he hasn't even got a shot off. And then a lot of the goal scoring burden falling at Raul Jimenez. So it'll be, you know, Steve is backing them to score. I can see why, but you know, I can't see where it's going to come from necessarily. City operating at such a high level in the Premier League.
Yeah, Steve's been loving his XG today, and I can tell you that Man City at the moment are on course to concede just 24.7 XG this campaign, which would be the lowest total of any Premier League team since records began. Are they still the title favourites, Steve?
Yeah, very much so, Dan. Yeah, 8-13, of course, with Chelsea's defeat last week against West Ham. So that kind of strengthened themselves at the top there. You know, defensively, we talked about the XG there. You know, Diaz and Cancelo have been brilliant. Edison's only faced, I think, 27 shots on target so far this season. And he's a pretty tough cookie to get past as well, isn't he? So it's all, I think a lot of people were thinking, yeah, Chelsea, this is going to be their season. But, you know, City keep on ticking along nicely. And they look deserved favourites for me to retain their title.
And how do you see this one playing out, Steve?
Three games this season where John Moss hasn't booked anybody. That's not the John Moss that used to be in Culture Club, by the way. I'm sure there's a "do you really want to hurt me" gag in that one, but that's one for the older viewers. Manchester City and Wolves are in the bottom half for cards received. I think it'll be under 2.5 cards shown by John Moss this weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Game three is Norwich against Manchester United, Saturday tea time. And last week was the first we got to see, George, of Ralph Rangnick's Manchester United. Some heavy analysis doing the round. Give me the George Ellick analysis.
Well, I mean, there seem to be two camps here. One camp that is taking a lot of learnings from that first performance against Crystal Palace, and then another who's laughing at those who are putting so much emphasis on that. And I think I fall somewhere in between. I mean, you absolutely can look into that performance, the way that they set up, even if it's been a very short amount of time, and learn something and learn the way that they're going to be playing going forward. And they look better drilled. You know, this is a Palace side who, under Patrick Vieira, have you know, dominated possession and dominated kind of the pressing side of games against other sides who do that very well. I think back to the derby against Brighton, where they just completely stopped Brighton from playing their own game. That was what United did to Palace here. Palace couldn't really... I mean, Palace created a few chances, but in terms of the actual gameplay, United had a lot of the ball in Palace's half. It was the Rangnick style that we know, where it wasn't possession for possession's sake. It was looking to get the ball forward and quickly. And that, you know, we've already seen there some of what he's trying to impart on these players coming through as well. It was interesting to see the way that he approached the Champions League game in midweek by giving a lot of youngsters a chance. He also, you know, he worked with the youngsters one-on-one in the days as well. I like the fact that he brought on Tom Heaton and then said afterwards he had no idea about Heaton's history in the Premier League and that it was kind of a bit of a swan song for him. So on the one hand, yes, we learned a great deal. On the other hand, it wasn't necessarily a resounding 1-0 victory. You know, Palace missed chances to go ahead, which would have given it a very, very different complexion. It was a Fred swinger with his weak foot from outside the area that's flown into the top left that's won them the game. So it wasn't like there was a massive due process here. The one stat that I thought was interesting, which was shown on Match of the Day, was the amount of times United won the ball back in the final third. I think it was the fourth highest this season for any Premier League side, but also the highest of Manchester United ever since records began in the Premier League. So that's showing that even in one game, they are pressing higher and more effectively in the opposition's, you know, territory than they ever have done under any manager. So, you know, to laugh entirely at those who are analysing that first game is wrong, because that is quite clear evidence of whatever's going on in the training ground coming off. And what we can probably expect to see is, as the players get fitter and start to understand what's being demanded of them more, it's going to become more and more effective. So a very positive start. And the one other part about Ranić, which, you know, not many of us knew about before, is he speaks so well. He's one of those guys, when you listen to him talking about the game and talking about his players, he's very at ease and he gets his message across incredibly well. And he's convincing. If I was a young player, I'd absolutely love to be playing under him. And I'm sure Mason Greenwood, amongst many others, will be delighted about the prospect of doing so.
From Ralph Ranić, who talks so well, over to Steve now. Steve?
what a great link.
Aramambasaka, what's going on?
Yeah, I didn't go to university like Oxford or Cambridge, you can clearly tell that, yeah. Or school, come to think of it. The narrative about him previously was he wasn't great going forward and he was really good defensively. And now we've seen him lose quite a bit of confidence. He's, I would say, an injury, and he's lost his place in the team now. I was looking early at the stats for his passing. I thought it was quite interesting the fact that he has actually made the most short passes for Manchester United this season by quite a way. And this new system might not be suited to them. You know, the game against Crystal Palace with Telles and Dalot bombing on forward. I think Telles had 66 touches in the Crystal Palace half during that game as well. So it feels like he's got a job on to prove himself as a £50 million defender at the moment, with him look like he's being again there in second spot as regards to Ragnick's thoughts of playing at fullback.
Yeah, Norwich humbled by Spurs last week, despite actually a good performance and a decent start to life under Dean Smith. But goals are a massive, massive problem. Sargent, Eder, Pukki, all missed sitters. Dean Smith would have, I mean, it's the XG show this week, because Dean Smith would have liked the XG numbers. It was 2.05 to 1.25 in favour of Spurs, but decent numbers from Norwich there. They would have been quite satisfied that they might have nabbed a goal under normal circumstances with those numbers. But in the last 25 Premier League games, George, they've scored just 9 goals from 246 shots on goals. So a 3.7% conversion rate, or one goal for every 27 attempts. Something needs to happen in January, doesn't it?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people would say that's concerning. I would go the other way. And if I was Dean Smith, I'd be delighted by that, because that doesn't continue. That changes.
Do you not think?
If you're
25 games are a long time.
Exactly. That's my point. So poor finishing will come into it to a degree. But if you are on a ridiculous run, it's like West Brom in the Championship a couple of weeks ago. They hadn't scored in 6 games, had an XG of 5 in those 6 games. And everyone was saying, you know, it's the finishing, it's terrible. No. If you keep doing that, you're going to score. That is an unsustainable anomaly. And, you know, yes, it might have been over a longer period of time for Norwich. But, you know, you mentioned there, they missed 3 good chances against Spurs. That's good. You know, that is them getting into goal-scoring opportunities. We've seen too often this season that Norwich have been unable to do that under Daniel Farke. So Dean Smith, you know, that's the first part of the job done. If you keep putting the ball, I mean, I'm sure Brighton fans listening to this saying, yeah, we've been told this for the last 2.5 years. But if you keep putting the ball into good areas and you get the right players, Tamu Pukki is, I'm not necessarily convinced he's someone who is a top-class Premier League striker, but he certainly is a good finisher. So if you can cater your side around getting him into good goal-scoring opportunities, he will score goals. Adam Ida's the same as well, even though he's young. I mean, I think, going back to that market that Steve mentioned earlier, the top newcomer market, that 12-1 Norwich is a big price. They are definitely the least likely of the three. I'm by no means saying here that they are going to win that. But at the same time, that 12-1 gives them a very, very small chance. And we're still, you know, almost in the season's infancy, and they're only three points behind Watford. So much can change, and you've got a manager coming in who could easily improve their performance levels, and already has to an extent. So I wouldn't put anyone off backing that 12-1 for Norwich to do so. You know, they are still the least likely. They're still likely to go down. But it doesn't take, you know, we're playing here with quite fine margins when all three sides aren't in for very many points. So this is obviously a very, very tough ask, and they'd take a point immediately. And I'm going to be interested to see how Smith sets up here, because we know from last season, especially at Villa, that when Dean Smith plays against a side who press any opportunity and throw men forward, like Ranić is likely to do, he normally fights fire with fire to a pretty entertaining end, namely a certain match against Liverpool last season. So I'll be intrigued to see if he goes the same way about it here and looks to match fire with fire.
you've almost persuaded me on that 12-1, but not quite. You didn't do enough to get it over the line, George. You didn't quite convince me enough. Michael Bailey's been writing in The Athletic that Smith asked for the first 4 weeks to look at his current crop and assess whether where their strengths and weaknesses were before having a substantial discussion over what could be done in January to help them out. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. What's your prediction for this one, George?
Yeah, prediction here, I think to go, as I mentioned there, with goals, because I mentioned the approach we're likely to see from, well, we know how Ranić's going to set up. And even though that was only a 1-0 game against Palace, so we saw enough there to suggest to me that we're going to continue to see him attacking. I fancy Norwich to create some chances, as I've already mentioned as well. So in total, it's going to be over 2.5 goals and both teams to score, which is 11-8.
Excellent. Thank you very much, George. Game 4, Leicester v Newcastle, Sunday, 2 p.m. And stop the press, Steve. Newcastle have won a game of football.
Don't we know it? Those celebrations.
No, yeah, I thought we know it.
I thought they'd won a trophy. No, I think it was a huge win for Newcastle. Massive. You know, the clean sheet as well. I think they're up to 10 points now. And then, you know, all the positive PR that we've seen already from Eddie Howe, you know, getting in training at 6 o'clock, whoopee-doo. The players talking about the fitness levels, you know, all these easy goals as well from a PR point of view, getting rid of the Sports Direct logos, etc. Everything feels great now. And they certainly need that as well, Dan, with a run of games that they've got coming up, starting with Leicester away this weekend. Just a glance down now, Liverpool away, then it's Manchester City at home, Manchester United at home as well. And a bit of a feel-good factor for them this week. They'll be well-rested, unlike Leicester City this weekend, for a number of reasons. And they're 4-5 to be relegated. And I think there's a... bookmakers think they've got a chance of getting out of this. And then over the course, you know, next month as well, we've got a busy transfer window, you would have thought, with a few ins and outs. So big win for Newcastle, definitely.
Yeah, everyone's kind of pinning their hopes on this January transfer window for Newcastle. Tarkowski is one player who we thought they might look at, but he's expected to now stay at Burnley this January. Adam Crafton told this very podcast on Monday that there are a lot of clubs reluctant to even deal with Newcastle. So it's going to be tough, George, if they are pinning their hopes on getting players in January. Just because you've got all the money in the world doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to fix everything or even get anyone in at all.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that if Newcastle fans are still expecting them to spend a couple of £100 million on players in January, I think they might be disappointed here. Eddie Howe has come out in the press and kind of tried to play down those hopes, saying, you know, we can't just buy our way out of trouble here. I think they're going to struggle to recruit from the Premier League, as you mentioned there, because basically Premier League teams are going to be unwilling to deal with them. And I have a feeling there are at least 19 Premier League boards or execs who would have a stronger opinion this year than other years on who they'd like to get relegated from the Premier League, and that is probably Newcastle. So therefore, they're going to be shopping abroad. The whole football world is aware of Newcastle's new financial clout. There's, you know, the links with the owners and Inter as well, which probably wouldn't help if they're going to have to fund that too. So we'll see. I mean, I would not be rushing to back Newcastle to stay up on the thinking that they're going to bring in a whole raft of quality players. I think that's going to be difficult for them to do. And it would be foolish because they're odds on to get relegated. So if they were to go out and spend loads of money on players now, are those players, you know, we've seen, you know, teams who spend a lot of money previously and then get relegated afterwards, you suddenly have a whole host of players who don't want to be there, who it's hard to shift on massive wages that you can't really support. You've only got your parachute payments to do so. And we all know that's a different rabbit hole that we won't go down today. So, I'd be pretty concerned. Well, I wouldn't be concerned because, you know, Mike Ashley is gone. There's a positivity around the club. Eddie Howe is in. Steve Bruce is gone. There's lots to be happy about if you're a Newcastle fan. But I wouldn't hold your breath about a host of elite players coming in January.
Yeah, not much positivity around Leicester at the moment, Steve. No. You know, 2 fifth place finishes in a row, which on the face of it are 2 good finishes despite the circumstances, but they are all over the place defensively. I'm sure we've spoke about it before on this podcast, but I watched them at Villa Park and was alarmed at how easily you could get at them.
Yeah, I was coming back from Spurs Norwich, Dan, and I listened to the Villa game on the radio. I have to compliment the Villa fans, by the way. It sounded like a great atmosphere.
It was very good. Very good.
I mean, especially when they showed that disallowed goal. Yeah, that felt like a massive turning point. But a huge worry for me, if I'd a Leicester City fan, would be the former Schmeichel, who was like almost minus seven on the goals prevented table. He looked rattled at Villa Park. I know he's had a lot of consecutive appearances. I think 129, I think I read in The Athletic, and he's got more trophies in the cabinet than me, that's for sure. But 27 goals conceded this season, 10 from dead balls, 6 from corners. Their mixed zonal marking, of course, has been very well highlighted. Course of Danny Ward now to come in, which you kind of understand, I suppose, if you're a Leicester City fan, because you'll be frustrated this season. My tip is going to surround another Leicester dead ball as well. But this is a big game, but Leicester are actually odds on to win it at 4-6, which might surprise a few people.
Give us the tip then, Steve.
Jamal LaSalle's born in Derby, ex-Forest, facing Leicester, scored recently against Brentford. So I'm going to go for any time goal scorer at a juicy 18-1 against the Leicester side, very weak at set plays.
And I'm not going to pick on you, because last time I did that, Reguilon scored, so I'm not going to bother with all that again. But Steve does love a fairy tale. The way he's teed it up, he absolutely loves a fairy tale.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
Final game we're going to look at today is Crystal Palace versus Everton, which is 4:30 on Sunday. Again, I found Newcastle finally win a game. Felt like a while, George, since Everton had won a game. And on Monday night, you might know it was against Arsenal, but it was a good performance considering everything that's going on. The protests, felt like a club in crisis, did well to get a win.
I absolutely loved it. I mean, I thought it was one of the most enjoyable kind of non Big Six playing each other Premier League games on TV we've had for a long time. The first half was terrible. I'm not going to deny that. But that second half, and I liked, you know, we had the protest that didn't really happen. Instead, the Goodison crowd started making a lot of noise. I think that might have been just in a reaction to what they saw in the first 25 minutes, which was their side pressing high, you know, running into the ground for them, showing a bit of quality. We mentioned last week about Arsenal and their record when going ahead. The same happened again. You know, they were good until they went ahead. But they only won the game 2-1, and it was from a Damari Gray unbelievable goal. On the balance of play, they could have won that game so comfortably. You know, Richarlison had scored a hat-trick, two of which were offside, thanks to VAR. The second of which I still think is, you know, because of the result, everyone's kind of glossed over the fact that it was one of the weirdest VAR decisions, where the line itself seemed to be about an inch in front of Richarlison's foot. He didn't really seem to gain much in terms of an advantage from either offside either. And then they deserved their win. You know, Damari Gray was very lively. Richarlison looked like a completely different player to what we've seen at times this season. And whatever has galvanised them, you know, and there were a lot of people when they were 1-0 down saying that Benitez should get sat for not playing Lucas Digne and for falling out with Lucas Digne and all this stuff. That's all been forgotten. And it felt like for once, the whole club, in terms of the players, the fans and Benitez himself, were pulling together to get over the line there. And you saw the reaction from Damari Gray as well after the final whistle. Some people saying he should have had a red card, for one yellow for taking his shirt off and one yellow for jumping into the crowd, which I don't think it really works that way. But yeah, I was really impressed, and I think they've got to use that as a platform now to push on. And this is another winnable game against a side in Palace who, as I mentioned, have impressed early in the season, but have definitely dropped away a little bit.
Yeah, winless in four now, Steve. Should there be any need for concern at Selhurst Park? I mean, Benteke missed a hatload hat load. Can you even have it? I've done it again when I'm going to be on Football Cliche. Can you have a hat load of chances? I'm not sure if that's more than a bucket load of chances. It's a hat load. If it's a big hat, I guess you can. Yeah, okay, we'll say. Yeah. We'll say. I look forward to featuring on that again next week. Could it be time for Edouard now to come in for Benteke? Just be a little bit more, pacing behind, causing a bit more problems. He's not playing much recently.
No, he hasn't. Benteke's had some big chances in the last few games. That's three games down where he hasn't scored. And of course, Edouard came into the side with a blaze of glory. I think he got a brace, didn't he, in his first game. But he hasn't had many minutes since. I think he started one of the last four. But going back to Patrick Vieira and Palace, they're 9-1 to be relegated. So they're still a big price to go down, Dan. They've had some injuries to some key players. Anderson and MacArthur spring to mind. Conor Gallagher was overrun at Old Trafford. Zaha's not influencing games like he has done before. So that's a bit of a concern. They have been pretty clinical this season for a side that averages just over 3 shots on target per game. But from a school report, 7 out of 10, job done. And I think Palace will be fine this season.
Yeah, I think Vieira would be happy with that 7 out of 10 rating. They are an impressive side to watch. They've definitely, the change in style has been really, really strong. It's good to see. It takes a lot to do that quickly, so they might not be getting the results, but I think there's definitely been improvements at Crystal Palace. With that in mind, what's the tip here, George?
I mentioned him before. I think Richarlison at 11-4 is the value way to play this, to score any time. You know, he is their key attacking player. He was incredibly dangerous against Arsenal. He looks to be someone who does blow hot and cold. When he's in a good spell, he is... You know, he's better basically than what we normally see. He's a player who, when he's at the top of his game, should be playing for a top six team, in my opinion. And that is what we got on Monday. And if we get that again here, I think that 11-4 for a player. You know, you look at the players who are supposedly a shorter price than him to score here. They're mainly Palace players, but I think if he turns up in that kind of form, playing through the middle again, he'll fancy his chances of getting on the score sheet.
Yeah, I think that's a good synopsis of Richarlison. When he's on top of his game, probably a top six player. When he's not, probably a bottom six player.
Yeah.
No, you didn't say that, but I've just put the last bit into your mouth.
I think that's
a good synopsis. That does us for today, but just enough time for me to remind you that if for some reason you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic and you would like to change that, go to theathletic.com/footballpod and you'll gain full access to all the brilliant articles as well as ad-free podcasts for just £3.33 a month for an entire year. That's theathletic.com/footballpod. Thanks to Steve, thanks to George, and thanks to all of you, of course, for listening. Remember to hit the subscribe button so that you never miss a show. And Mark Chapman, David Ornstein and company will be back on this feed on Monday. You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. Enjoy the football and have a great weekend.
The Athletic.